Our international and our intelligence agency expert is Jack Rice. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about what the heck is going on in Saudi Arabia and with the Trump administration. Jack, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time, my friend.
No, it's great to be with you again.
It's good to have you with us. You've been traveling all over the place, man.
Yeah, it's been a lot of work lately. I mean, in the States, but outside too. I mean, it's the nature of the world sometimes. You get real busy and you just chase it. I think everybody understands that.
I'm going to guess it was about 4 or 5 years ago, you were on my show, and you had talked about watch out when drones get to be, you know, you can start delivering heavier payloads and they can go further distances. You actually said this was right after the beginning of the year, a few years ago. And here we have a case where Yemeni extremists have claimed credit for bombing the oil refineries and oil fields in Saudi Arabia with drones. First of all, let's get your thoughts, because when that happened, immediately the Yemeni rebels took credit for the bombing, which somehow got changed by Pompeo very quickly to this actually was Iran, not Yemen.
Yeah, this is really disconcerting when you look at what we have here. I mean, it's such a complicated question, and you get so deep into this, people have to remember that the war that's taking place between the Saudis and in Yemen right now, and the Houthi rebels were supported by the Iranians. And so there's a lot of weaponry that swings back and forth. But specifically, the Saudis, UAE, and others have been fighting and killing a lot of people in Yemen. So that issue has been taking place. Yemeni rebels have taken responsibility for this. At the very same time, Saudi and U.S. investigators now say with a very high degree of probability, they can show the trajectory of the bombings actually coming out of southern Iran. And so using that issue creates an entirely different dynamic in terms of responsibility and in terms of what the response could potentially be.
When the oil tankers were attacked in the Persian Gulf, initially the U.S. was coming out and saying, oh, these were Iranian attacks. And the people on the boats were the ones saying, no, this is not as you described it. And so there was some immediate question. I have seen one report that says that it might not have been drones. It might have been an actual missile. What are we seeing that can say, obviously a drone can come in from any angle. So have you seen any of the proof that says this came from the Saudi Arabian area? Or excuse me, from the Iranian area?
No, we haven't seen it yet. Okay. We haven't seen it yet. And that's actually what's interesting, because when we first heard about this, the argument that it was drones. And now what we're hearing is, it might have been cruise missiles. And so flying at low altitude, according to what we have, saying this trajectory from certain parts of the region. The problem is it's very difficult to determine exactly what's going on. And the idea of something called a false flag operation, somebody else simply doing this, is certainly very real. I mean, there's a lot of things to think about this. If you realize there's about 100 billion barrels of oil are produced every day that are actually pumped up out of the ground. And if you look at the Saudis, give or take, they produce about 10 of those. And of those 10, what they're saying is this attack actually cut their production in half. Now, at the same time, you look at what else is going on and all the oil that comes out of the Strait of Hormuz, and that's about 20% of the oil in the world. So if we're talking about, you're looking at Saudi, you're looking at Iraq, you're looking at Iran, you're looking at Qatar, you're looking at UAE. All of them are coming out of the region. And at the same time, and this is what makes it weird, is what the Saudis are talking about doing right now is having an initial public offering of their oil company, Aramco. And the real question is, does that play a role in this attack, and who benefits most as a result of it? And so you ask a lot of questions, but the real issue is, are the Iranians the obvious, the logical attacker in a case like this? They could be, but it's very possibly that it could be somebody else.
So there is the possibility this could be a corporate war, or at least a war being conducted by a country who doesn't like the potential financial aspects of this oil company going public.
Well, you've got to realize, Aramco and Saudi Arabia are almost synonymous. They control about 90% of all of the oil production in Saudi Arabia, and they really are the same. And I think you also have to realize one of the things about Aramco, about this organization, is they can pump oil cheaper than any other company on the planet. They also have the ability to increase the amount of oil that they produce to over 12 billion barrels a day. That's more than anybody else, including the United States. And so a lot of these issues are sitting out there. But part of the problem that we have is you have the complexity that comes from the Trump administration pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal, which has created massive confusion and a lot of anger on behalf of the Iranians, which has the potential of creating something on top of that. So the problem is there are so many issues that are going on at the same time, and what you get from the president has been, and I believe the tweet was, we're locked and loaded, which is about the last thing that I think we need to hear right now by almost anybody when you realize what's on the line.
Yeah, he definitely has brought his gasoline. One other quick point about, before we talk about the attack itself, Saudi Arabia's got a lot of money. They've been buying a lot of arms. Considering the sensitive nature of these refineries, if indeed half their production has been taken offline, how was this not better protected? Because I'm actually at a little bit of a loss at how someone could so easily derail half of their oil, production.
Well, it's a wonderful question because I was actually thinking the same thing. Now, if you talked to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, what their argument was all of their defenses were focused to the south towards Yemen, and that they were defending themselves against that issue. But the problem with that doesn't make any sense. Because a lot of those things are going to be in the north anyway. They're going to be facing east. They're going to be facing to the north and east, basically out of concern for what comes out of Iran. Because they have talked about this again and again and again in terms of who the ultimate aggressor is, even in the Yemen issue, which is the Iranians. And so to simply say, oh, we didn't have anything there because we were focusing to the south, simply doesn't make any sense. And I think anybody who's really looked at this issue for a longer period of time would realize that that just isn't logical.
Yeah, something's weird there. Jack Rice joining us right now. Last night, not only did you have the, lock and loaded comment from Sunday night, but yesterday, a lot of people's jaws hit the ground when Trump suggested both that he was waiting to hear, his orders from the Saudi Crown Prince on if we were going to attack Iran, as well as also sort of implying that the U.S. military is available for a price to be purchased for use, which is both of those. I am stunned that immediately the Congress didn't get in there and say, nope, neither one of those things. We don't make decisions on what the Saudis want us to do. We make decisions on what we don't do, and you sure as hell are not going to sell off our military to the highest bidder.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation, and it's actually getting worse, because if we look sort of historically now and look at the problems that we face, and this goes before Trump, so let's be clear about that. One of the problems that the U.S. has in the region is they have little to no credibility. And you can go back to the Obama administration where President Obama talked about this red line in Syria. And what would happen was you would see ISIS, you would see others step right up to that line and then step over, and then Obama would pull back. And the problem is the Saudis were really upset about these. Qatar was upset, United Arab Emirates, very upset, saying the Americans just don't have credibility on the issue. But on the other side of this, look at what's going on with Iran right now, where the Iranians had a nuclear agreement with not just the Americans, but with the Europeans, with the Russians, with the Chinese. The entire world came together and said, we're going to have an agreement when it comes to nuclear questions. And this is important. The Iranians abided by the agreement.
Yes.
The IAEA had looked at this issue and was in Iran, very clearly watching the issue of nuclear proliferation and development of a nuclear material. And in fact, the Iranians did not do that. The problem with that is when President Trump unilaterally pulled out of the agreement, what it really did was not just drive the Iranians to start moving forward, but what it really does is, how do you convince the Iranians to ever come to the table again when you get a promise from the United States and then the United States simply walks away from their own promises, knowing full well that in the future there is no way for the Iranians to actually step at the table with them? In fact, the Grand Ayatollah just today said, Absolutely. We will not sit down with the Americans unilaterally because we don't trust them.
They can only trust you for 4 years.
Well, and see, that's the problem here, is what we've seen prior to this president, and sort of push him aside for a second. You can look at the left in this country, you can look at the right in this country, both Democrats and Republicans, and what we have seen, relatively speaking, and I'm not suggesting I like it, but what we have seen is a relatively consistent foreign policy. Now, what we generally like is we love totalitarian dictators. We do. And we have supported them across the globe for decades. But we've been consistent in terms of what we do. And as a result, what we have seen is our allies, for what they are generally watching, but they accept that from administration to administration, they have certain expectations. The problem that you have with this administration is they're willing to flip everything on its head, which means that there's really no trust or even an opportunity to sit down and say, we will do X, Y, and Z because we know what that means. Nobody actually knows what the United States will or won't do, which may be fine if you're trying to negotiate a deal in Vegas or Atlantic City, but it does not work on the geopolitical stage.
It doesn't. I mean, he's threatening to renegotiate the international postal agreement, which, I don't know where he's going with that. One last thing on this situation before I ask you two other quick questions. In regards to this, Russia, Russia is an interesting oddball here because they have been working with Iran. They've got a relationship with that country, which is, I can't quite tell where it's at right now. As you mentioned, the nuclear agreement dissolved, but it almost seemed like that was a benefit for Iran, that they've been actually able to get themselves closer to that regime.
Oh, there's no question about it. And actually, if you look at who has benefited, and dare I say this, from the current administration in the United States, who has benefited most, it'd be the Russians. If you look at where the Russians are, you have seen the Turks, specifically, they're buying weaponry from the Russians now. So you think about this. This is a NATO country who actually has American arms, Western arms, and Russian arms at the same time, which is almost unheard of. You've seen cooperation between two different groups. So I've seen this when I was in Kosovo or Afghanistan or Iraq. It's always wild to see AKs and M4s in the same room side by side, which I find weird. But at the same time, the Russians have benefited by pulling the Turks away from the Americans as the Americans go into isolationism. They've also become closer and closer with the Iranians. They've also continued to support, to some degree, the Syrian regime, the Assad regime. And in fact, what they're doing right now is Putin, in the last 36 hours, has already talked about making more arms available to the Saudis. So they're actually willing to start selling to the Saudis, and they're competing with the Americans to see who can sell more.
Well, thank God it's just getting messier. There is a place on the planet that could get messier there. I want to point really quick to Israel, the elections here, because of course what happened is Netanyahu failed to get a majority, a coalition in Israeli government, forced them to go back to the polls. In a surprising turn of events, I'm reading this off Raw Story, exit polls in Israel show Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu losing the election. The Prime Minister voting bloc failed to reach 61 seats in the majority of the Knesset. The second largest party there, I believe, or the third largest party, has already said that they're going to side against Netanyahu. So this, it looks like we might actually have a leadership change in Israel. Your thoughts on this election? Because obviously there's been this corruption charge hanging over his head forever. It just finally looks like it might have caught up with him.
Oh, there's no question about that. I mean, that was part of the problem. Originally, they had the ability, at least Bibi Netanyahu thought that he was going to get a ruling majority. Unfortunately, he simply wasn't able to do that. And because of that, Benny Gantz actually did better than people expected. There were thoughts that he might actually win anyway, and that the Blue and White Party may not be able to do this. This is a retired general, very respected in the country as well. And I think this is important to consider, is that people have talked about Netanyahu like Netanyahu represents all of Israel. It represents every philosophical view in the country, and that simply is not the case. And in fact, he has been incapable of getting the majority in the country. So it'll be interesting to see if Benny Gantz is able to get that majority and then actually lead the government. If that's possible, you may see a shift in terms of what that means. But it also does something else. It says something about this sort of philosophical view that we have seen from Donald Trump, to some degree you've seen from Bibi Netanyahu, to some degree what you have seen from Boris Johnson in Britain, what you saw in France, what you saw in Germany. This drive to the right, I think, we may have seen the end of the swing of that pendulum, and this may be a hint of things to come, which I think is really interesting to see on a worldwide basis.
You brought up Johnson. I got to do this. That Luxembourg president just pantsed him huge because he keeps thinking he's going to negotiate this, brings in the Hulk reference, and then goes to meet with the European Union. The European Union says the deal's on the table, the timeline is set. And we're done talking. And I have no idea what Johnson thought he had as collateral that he could bring to the table, but he even refused to show up for the post-press conference to talk about it because, it's just a mess for him. He has nowhere to go.
Oh, he doesn't. And I think that's part of the problem. If you look at what he was doing before, he was great at sound bites. But generally speaking, he wasn't really doing the work that was necessary. And this is coming from people even within his own party, although you saw a massive shift in this fight when he decided he was going to dissolve Parliament and then essentially drive Brexit through without an agreement. And the real fear of what this does, it's not just economic. You got to remember, you also have the problem that's going on with Ireland, because Northern Ireland and then Ireland itself, you're also looking at what's going on with Scotland, because you're seeing that Northern Ireland has very real concerns about security from the rest of Ireland and the troubles that that caused for decades. You even see in Scotland itself, it's becoming even more popular that they separate themselves from Great Britain, mm-hmm. and they become truly and utterly independent, which, by the way, this has been going on for some time now, but you're seeing a drive because what Scotland wants to do is remain part of Europe, even if Britain, or I should say England, goes off on its own. And you have a Boris Johnson who apparently seems to be incapable of understanding the ramifications of all of these things other than the great soundbite that it creates.
Well, and the wild part about Scotland is they're using, of all the things, the fact that they feel if Johnson lied to the Queen about the dissolving of the Parliament, that they're using his lie to the Queen to basically challenge this. And it is setting it up for Scotland to be its own country here within 5 years or so.
Now, one thing that I find fascinating is to watch the minutes where the Prime Minister has to speak in Parliament. And it's a beautiful thing to watch, and for Americans, if they ever have an opportunity, they should watch it too. If not, you can watch it on YouTube, you can watch it online. And the beauty of it is what happens is that every leader has to stand up and take the hits that are coming at them, and stand up for the principles and their policies themselves. And if they can't, what happens is it becomes very, very clear that they can't. And what we've seen in the United States is you never have that anymore. You don't get that sort of confrontation, mm-hmm. and you have every president on all sides. They sort of wrap their own people around them, and they never have to actually stand up and start fighting and arguing for what they believe and why. And in this case, Boris Johnson has had horrible problems, even not just from opponents, not just from Labour, not just from the Social Democrats, but actually from conservatives themselves, which really says a lot more about where he is and what he's trying to do.
I think both of us should go at Halloween as that parliamentary Black Rod character. I think that's the costume hit of the year. That's what I'm going to be shooting for this Halloween.
Well, I want to see a picture of that.
I will. I'll see what I can figure out. We're all smarter. Everyone, you're just listening to Jack Rice, you're all smarter after 15 minutes. Jack Rice, absolutely fantastic. JackRice.net, if I remember correctly. JackRice.net for all your Jack Rice needs. Jack, thank you very much. It's been a privilege chatting with you, my friend.
Take care. Bye-bye.